Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
An Erios original.
I'm just realizing a lot of things in this time about how like heavy my heart is. And I think it is because I've been marginalized, you know? And I think I've compared myself to other people who seem to have a lighter heart, and I've thought it was a failing in me.
Hi, this is Margaret Cho. You're listening to The Margaret Cho. It's Pride Month. We're so proud. We're here. We're queer. We're proud. This is a special Pride episode, and we're speaking to Cameron Esposito. She is a great comedian. She is a really, really, really cool person, really cool author. She has a new book. It's called Save Yourself, and we are talking to her today. I'm so glad to be talking to you. How are you doing?
Oh, I am doing... I feel like there's so many answers to that. Yeah. That's one of the toughest ones right now. Of all the questions, that's one of the toughest ones.
There's a lot to say. I mean, there's a lot going on. But in the basic, you know, and I think for comics, there's another layer too of it. It's kind of like, for me, it's very hard to even answer it because I am realizing how much of an extrovert I am. I never realized I was an extrovert. I didn't know I was one until this pandemic hit. And then I'm like, I didn't know I was an extrovert. And I now am grappling with the fact that I actually am one, and I hate it.
That's really funny. I am definitely having the same experience. I would have said, you know, I think if you're somebody who chooses this job, I think there's something to be said about like the amount of control that one needs in social situations. Like I prefer to be the boss of the social situations. I'm always working on vulnerability. That's not my natural state. And I think that I had confused that with introversion, with like being an introvert, where I would have thought, like, I kind of like to be alone, but I don't think that is what's happening. I think I like to be in the middle of the room surrounded by a bunch of people, even if I'm not speaking. Like, just the energy absorption is what I'm noticing. It's exhausting.
Right. It's hard. It's weird. It's like I feel like, and I think of jokes and I find them kind of melting away because I don't feel like I can record them because I don't feel like I want to capture them. It's like, I feel like a fisherman who's letting all of the fish just swim away.
I've done twice now. I've done a full hour on Zoom with like a bunch of people. Like, I think there were like over 1,000 at the first thing, but they're all muted. And before that, this is another interesting experiment that I did. I was trying to figure out, can I record myself doing an hour of stand-up? And like put that out somewhere, like like, will that look like stand up? And I first did it just by myself, like in my house, and then I did it with 1,000 people who I could not hear. And because I was trying to record it via Zoom, like the main face that I was looking at was also my own face. So in terms of situations, if somebody had walked into the house, it would have looked identical both times. But my performance, when I knew, just knowing there were people watching, it was night and day. It was it was a completely different, like I watched the first thing back and I looked so depressed. Like really down. And then when I watched it back with other people there, people I couldn't hear, like my timing was good. It was fascinating.
Yeah. Did it feel like you had space, though, for people to react as opposed to when you were doing it, when you knew there weren't people watching?
That's exactly it. Is like, given the fact that I knew there were people there, I could do the mental substitution. Like, mm-hmm. I've been on stage enough times to know how laughs work. Mm-hmm. But if there, it just helped with being able to imagine it. Like, I yeah. could do it with the laughs in my mind, but not if there were no people there. Anyway, yeah. these are things we're finding out about ourselves that I never would have. How would I have ever known that prior to this?
Well, I think that, like, my mind tends to be filled with so much negative judgment naturally that if I had nobody there, that I would fill it with some negative presence. So that it would just automatically be a bad time, you know? And that I would just, like, negative project something terrible happening. And so, like, every time I've done a Zoom show or an Insta Live show, I've always projected a negative experience onto it so that it's like I'm bombing. And so then I always get mad during it. And then it kind of ends up funny because I always think comics are funnier when they're bombing. That's usually when people are their funniest because they start to, like, flail and desperately reach, which ends up being the funniest scenario almost always, because in desperation, we kind of bring out the best in ourselves. So I always like that.
I mean, Margaret, one thing that's funny about that is, like, I think that's kind of always how I'm doing comedy, is in desperation, because my stand-up is... I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I'm considering, like, this is so weird, but in, like, I'm considering potentially going to divinity school. And this is, like, part of my past that I was super duper Catholic, but then my Catholicism broke because I'm very gay. The Catholic Church is, like, colonialism writ large. You know, when I realized what was happening for women, I was just like, I think I got to get out of here. But anyway, this is all to say, I think that I've always been doing stand-up from a place of, like, this is the stuff that matters to me the most in the world. Like a minister or a preacher, you know? It's, like, always been life or death for me. And I've been noticing in this time that that's still how I'm approaching it. And I watch some folks who are sort of able to make what they might call jokes. And I'm like, I just feel like I've always been operating from, like, perspective of, like, bleeding on stage my most abject fears and traumas. And I didn't realize how different that might be than what other people are doing. Like, I never noticed the contrast. And that's not negative. No, neither of these things are negative.
No.
I think sometimes I've actually had a lot of jealousy at somebody who can get on stage and talk about, like, Bedhead or Doritos or whatever. I'm like, please teach me your ways. But that's never been me.
No, but I think that that's also, like, the speech and pattern of privilege. Like, people who have the headspace to be able to talk of insignificant things also have, you know, they have the brain power for their mind to work on stuff like that because they don't have to worry about oppression or sexism or rape or fear or homophobia or disparity. Or prejudice, you know, like, it's a very sort of privileged way of being when you have the privilege to think about Doritos or Bedhead because you don't have to worry about being murdered. You know, like, it's like, you know, it's a different kind of it's a different thing because, you know what I mean? Like, we actually do have to fear for our lives being othered. And so, we're not at fault because we don't have that, you know, ability to do that. It's actually better that we're doing what we're doing because it's more of a life-saving thing to talk about what we're talking about.
Yes. I think that, I mean, it really actually is moving to hear you say that because I think for me, I think I have compared myself and felt lacking. I think I have compared myself. I'm just realizing a lot of things in this time about how like heavy my heart is. And I think it is because I've been marginalized, you know? And yeah. I think I've compared myself to other people who seem to have a lighter heart. Mm-hmm. And I've thought it was a failing in me. Like, mm-hmm. why can't I synthesize all of this trauma into yeah. not into non-trauma? Like, what's wrong with me that I can't be, you know, the floodgates? But I don't think that's an accurate depiction of what's going on. I think it's more what you're saying, you know, and I'm stepping into that feels like it could be some real freedom for me because I felt down on myself about this. Why am I always making an hour of stand-up about rape when this guy's making an hour of stand-up about this? You know, why am I always, sometimes I feel bothered by my own seriousness. And
it's hard though, because it's like so hard to be burdened by identity in that way. It's like we are so burdened by our place in society, but we just can't help it. And there's like so much to get out from underneath that it's like we don't have that mental power to be able to like do that sort of the small things that, you know, the guys can do. Like the guys don't have to do like all of the shit that we have to do. The women have like to do so much more. And then the gay women have to do so much more. It's like we have a lot more responsibility, and that's unfortunate, but we just do, you know? And then maybe the generation after us will have it easier. Maybe they can do less work because we're doing this now. Or maybe when we're older, we can do less work.
Right. I hope so. I mean, that's actually what a wonderful segue, because I had a book come out. I'm going to hold it up for you. It's called Save Yourself. And you are in here, but I cannot find the passage. I was trying to page through it and find it, but I can't find it because I'm ill-prepared. But somewhere in my home, what I have is a copy of a book of yours.
Mm-hmm.
That I went to Brookline Booksmith. I lived in Boston at the time.
Yeah.
And you were the first comic I ever saw live. You're the first comic I ever saw perform live.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so, I think it was at the Orpheum, if that's even a place. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. It is. I remember that, yeah.
I was so taken by the performance that there was like an opportunity to go to buy your book, pre-order your book. Between like 12 and 12:15. It was like such a small window. And I like put it in my calendar. I mean, I was like, not yet at an age where there was anything else in my calendar. You know, like I was like, it was just like the whole week, and I went and bought the book, and it meant that I got to go to like this special signing. Mm-hmm. And I have this signed book from, you know, way back in a different part of my life. And I wasn't really into comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like at that point, it was, I was into a lot of other stuff. And then it was just your book. I remember being nervous. Like, what if she wants to be friends? I thought to myself, what if she wants to be friends? What's the thing that I'm going to say? But of course I now know that on the other side of things, it's like, you're not thinking about that. Life is very busy. Everything's going through. But I thought for sure one possible outcome was that we would become friends. Which is amazing because I think I wrote that in this book, and now we are friends. Telling you about it.
Now we are friends, and that's wonderful. I remember I met you actually. It was at your first appearance on TV, the late night. It was the late show.
Yes, I did meet you there. Yes, on Fergie. Which actually, that's exactly. Yes. Great memory. That is where we met. Because that was a hugely impactful night in my life.
So exciting. It was really exciting.
Afternoon. It was incredibly exciting. It was
so
like
fun.
A late night appearance that actually mattered. Also, late night was different then. You know, there was so fewer options for how to get yourself out there that
was like very and it's always so stressful because it's like what the 4 minutes and like 40 seconds of jokes. Mm-hmm. And it's like 6 minutes of comedy, really, but it's like 4 minutes and 40 seconds of jokes. And then it's like you're on, it's like 4 p.m. and it's so scary. It's like one of those things, but you killed, and it was like a really incredible set. And Darcy was the celebrity guest, and then you and me. Yeah.
Also, I met Jay Leno there. Like, I just, yes, it was like Jay a very, yes. You know, for me, I think maybe you had a very different experience. Well, I'm curious if you had a different experience. For me, like coming from Chicago, when I started doing stand-up, it didn't feel like being a part of the entertainment industry was something even to shoot for. Like that started happening a little bit with folks like in the generation before me, like a Hannibal Buress or Kumail Nanjiani were like starting to get on TV. But for mm-hmm. a long time, Chicago was just a live performance city. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't like a place where then you thought you would move to Los Angeles and be on TV. I think mm-hmm. maybe San Francisco would have like a different vibe than that, where like people are, I don't know actually if that's true.
They're probably more ambitious. I mean, there was a sort of a trajectory that you would go like to LA and, you know, you would start off in San Francisco and, you know, there was like sort of a pattern of people would sort of follow like maybe what Robin Williams did and like, you know, you do clubs and then you would move to LA and then do TV or whatever, you know, that idea.
I think because Chicago was such an improv-based city, some of the stuff that people were trying to do was like essentially all be on SNL. And then eventually over time, it became a city that was known for its stand-up. But it was really wild to me when I got out here that I would be able to be on TV at all. I really thought it was like, maybe as a comic, all I ever do is just perform live. And then one day die. You know, like I just thought that would be the fullness of the career. So I think I'm also imagining that day was such a big deal for me because I was going to do stand-up on TV for the first time, which felt impossible.
Yeah. But so exciting and so fun and such a big deal. Like, you know, and when was your first, do you remember your first sets like live in Chicago, the first ones that you did?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I started doing improv in college and I got my first job performing in improv the day after I graduated from school. So I was immediately doing improv professionally.
Wow.
And then I moved to, I was in Boston and I worked at the two main theaters there. I was on the main stage of the like biggest improv theater in Boston, I think 4 months after I graduated from college, and I'd never taken a class, and I got fired within a few months because everybody was like, my age now, everybody was like in their 30s and 40s and had been working at this forever. And I was like 22. And the owner of the theater had to tell me that my shirts couldn't be crop tops. Like that's where I was at. Everybody else was like, I'm 40 and I'm supporting a family. And I was like, I was wearing crop tops, which at the time was not professional.
No. Well, that's weird.
So anyway, that's all to say I moved to Chicago and I just decided I could sort of tell people I was a stand-up moving to town.
Oh, okay.
Like I'd never done stand-up, but I had improv experience and I just thought, I can just say I'm a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
So
why not?
I started my own show.
Uh-huh.
And I'd never done stand-up before. I didn't know that like you should have a microphone.
Oh, okay.
And it was just a show. And then MySpace was the place at the time. So I like looked up who are the best comics in Chicago on, you know, whatever search engine was even feasible. And I invited all those people to perform on my show. And so like any person who started in Chicago that has continued to have a big career performed at this show because everybody was looking for stage time. And those were my first sets. I was performing for the first time, microphoneless, mostly talking about my dad.
Yeah.
And like then Kyle Kinane would perform or whatever.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, I did a show with him on New Year's Eve. Oh. Aww, good old days. Yeah. New Year's Eve. Aww. That's nice.
Well, ballsy.
Well, there's like this sort of time where like improv and comedy, like when you're starting improv and comedy, we sort of mixed a lot. I was in an improv group when I started and we mixed a lot. So sort of you could sort of say that you were doing both and it wouldn't really matter. You know, you were sort of accepted as both in the communities. Then there was like a great divide. There's sort of a big divide.
I was going to say in Chicago. Yeah. In Chicago, it's very like, you better know who you are and you better pick one and like absolutely fuck you if you think you can do both.
So well, after a certain point, then they get really divided. Like when you really start to get like on a certain level, then they don't mix. You know, when you start to sort of really make money too, like when you start to like make money at it, then you really don't mix. And then or and then when you start, I think when you start to get even more successful, then you start to mix again.
Well, I also think the other, that's, first of all, that's totally right. But I also think the other thing is that in that interim time, there's like a personality difference that comes out.
Yeah.
I think that improvisers are usually people who want to play well with others and who find other people funny in like an enriching way. I think stand-ups tend to be extremely competitive people.
Right.
You know, there's no every comic that is watching someone perform is off to the side. Maybe they're laughing. Maybe they're saying, that's good. Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. With arms crossed. But the thought in the mind is always jealousy. It's always
jealousy. Yeah. It's very jealous.
It's always fuck you for having that joke.
Yeah.
Like I used to have a show that I ran at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. There would always be an improv troupe like before the show that would come. They're high-fiving. Like, that was amazing when you did that. That was amazing. When comics, it's like you go up, someone else follows you, you fucking leave. Like, I bet, like, you better not tell a joke that's better than me. I'm furious. Now I gotta go home. I gotta go catch a second set so that I can prove to myself I'm better than you.
Right. Like,
it's the most, so it's a different group of people.
Right. It's like an unhappy sibling relationship. It's like the like competitive sibling relationship as opposed to like a supportive sibling relationship. You know, it's definitely, it's toxic.
How do you feel about that at this point? Because you also started doing stand-up so young. You have like,
oh God,
such a large view, more than most comics, such a large view of the full thing. How do you feel about that competition part?
I do really have compassion for it because I realize it comes from a lot of suffering and pain. And now I do have more of a loving eye towards it. But I do know that it just comes from this feeling of lack, like there's only enough laughter to go around, and that, you know, that there's not this abundance of joy and laughter, and that everybody can't have that. Or that everybody's only going to be like sort of there's this finite amount of jokes and a finite amount of mirth to go around. So that's all that is, you know, when it's actually infinite, you know, and there's an infinite amount of jokes and laughter to go around. And so when you really believe that, then you're much more free to enjoy it and free to laugh. But it's a small mind that thinks that way in comedy. But it's full of small-minded men mostly, and some women. A lot of the women in comedy are a lot, like, they have larger-minded. And then I find that I think most of the women that are in comedy are gay or bisexual, and then they always seem to do better because they don't care about what guys think, you know? And that's always, like, a really important quality to get ahead. You know, I think when you care about what guys think, the guys will keep you down, unfortunately. Yeah.
I don't know that anybody that is raised in this culture cannot care what guys think, because I have to watch that myself.
It's hard.
Even. But I think there's a huge gift for me because I was never trying to date within that community. And I think even if you're not trying to date the people in the audience or the specific comics on the show, if that's part of your mind, like if you can be rejected in that sort of fundamental way as a person, which is this like partnership sex way, like I do think it's a big gift that I have not had to deal with that. Actually, something that is a little strange though is the other side of that, where sometimes I have felt like men don't know what my usefulness is. Because it's not going to ever be fucking me. So then where would I be useful? You know, because we're all raised in a sick culture. We're all raised in a patriarchy that is ill.
Yeah.
So I understand where that's coming from. But I do see it sometimes from guys.
Yeah. And that's my projection too. It's like my projection is like, where am I useful if I think that you don't think that you can use me to be fucked?
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it's like, it's wow, like my projection, yes, of it too. So
that's right. Oh my God. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. We're all in the same.
It's like we're all in this together. Yeah. We're all in this like really dysfunctional, toxic, like projection nightmare. But, you know, it is something that we're all working on too. And it's also their fears. And it's a very sick game that everybody's playing, but we're all playing it. And it's like, how do we get over it? How do we stop? But it's like, as I get older, it feels better. It feels better.
How have you address that in yourself? Like, what have you done knowing that it's like this projection from you? What have you done?
I try to heal from the inside, you know, whatever that looks like. For me, it's like different things, you know, like it's just like active, like working on myself and just trying to improve my outlook and trying to improve my attitude. And it's a very organic process. And part of like this quarantine is good for that, like because it does make me really look at the way that I think and the way that I live and the way that I approach all of the processes of life. And so that's the one thing that I think is good, is that it's made everybody pause and actually actively look at who they are and be with themselves. And that's what's like maybe the positive thing of coming out of this, is maybe we'll know ourselves better. And then maybe that's why all these people are so mad about like wanting to get back to work, because they don't want to be with themselves anymore.
Yes.
They're so angry.
I totally hear you. I mean, it is a certain kind of mental torture to not have excuses, you know, for why things are or aren't happening. Like some stuff is real that's happening right now, but because we're spending so much time with ourselves, because I'm spending so much time with myself, mm-hmm, there aren't other people to look to, you know, this is why I feel this way, or here's where this comes from. It's coming from me. You know, that's, mm-hmm, that's what I hear in what you're saying, is that it's, you know, I'm not driving and stuck in traffic and screaming at someone else, and I get to be like, fuck this person who cut me off. It's like, no, the anger, the discontent, the pain, all of that is contained right in this apartment. I don't even need to leave. You know, yeah. it's a lot to realize what's there when things quiet down.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is something that like, it's weird because our lives are so like always in motion that it's weird to stop. I mean, like you travel all the time, right? So it's like, you're always moving. We're always going.
Constantly going. Also, I usually do 37 different types of jobs. I mean, this, mm-hmm, is like currently what you're doing, you know, like, this is a job that's separate from another job that you have. I have, mm-hmm, 9 million jobs that I do in a bunch of different locations. And, mm-hmm, I often, because I'm pretty like body aware person, I'm often aware of the natural stimulant that is the amount of work that I do and the yeah, type of work that I do. You, mm-hmm, know, I always am saying to folks, like after shows, it's, you're on drugs. Like I'm on drugs. Mm-hmm. Your body, oh, yeah, on, yeah, natural. Your vision is different. Mm-hmm. Sounds are different. Everything's heightened. Your skin feels different. You know, sometimes if somebody would want to hug me at that point, it feels like I don't want to be touched in a way that, mm-hmm, I'm like actually like a very squishy person usually, but it changes your whole thing. And so that's another thing that I'm really noticing, is how my life feels when it's more level, mm-hmm, because I never feel my life in a leveled out way ever.
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah, I understand. It's like a, you know, because we're constantly like adjusting our levels of like dopamine and like whatever, serotonin and adrenaline. And it's like always up and down, and it's, you know, like leveling out and, you know, the different people and like light and sensation and altitude.
Yes,
and stuff.
Yes, like, exactly.
It's always so different.
Yeah, I mean, even just like flying, you know, you're compressed and then you relax and like just the stuff that is physically doing to your body. And
right.
I think that that is a part of the job that I really love. Like that there's I'm comfortable in chaos. I clearly like chaos. If you're the type of person who wants to potentially humiliate yourself in front of thousands of people unless you do these things, you know, that's what stand-up always is you're like,
yeah,
I'm going to prevent my humiliation, but it could happen at any moment. You know, it's a very heightened way to live.
Yeah, it is very heightened. I mean, I think the one advantage too, which is a weird side thing, is I think that we probably have really strong immune systems.
Oh my God, I hope that's true.
I think that's
because
true.
Of what you're that's true.
You know, because of all of the different kinds of microphones that we're talking into.
Yes.
Because they're all super germy, because comics are all dirty and disgusting. So think of all of the comics' mouths that have been near.
I know.
Like all of the filthy comics, all those gross dudes, like all the different environments they've been in. And all of the mouths that have been close to the microphone and their hands touching it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh.
I mean, I'm sure that, you know, sometimes they clean them, but obviously, usually they don't. And, you know, every like radio station they've been in and, you know, all of this stuff.
No.
Like, you know, but also, you know, all the planes we're in, all of the hotels, all of the cars, whatever, you know. But I feel like we are really probably very strong because of the travel we do and the different environments we're in. So I think that's probably what's keeping us healthy.
Wow, I am going to take that read and I'm going to internalize it. I'm going to just carry it through the rest of my day because that's got to be true. Why would that not be true?
So.
That's got to be true. Also, because just the mics alone. Because I know you said you guess they clean them sometimes, but I don't think I have ever held a mic that didn't smell like breath, like just a lot of breath, like different breaths.
You know? I've seen them cleaned before, but only a couple of times over the past 30 plus years. I have seen on a couple of occasions somebody take Listerine and wipe them down with a towel.
Oh,
but
my God.
That's only been on a couple of occasions, and usually in a music venue. And I have seen a couple of comedians on different occasions bring their own microphone.
I've seen that, yeah.
Which I think is probably wise. I probably think it will happen a lot more nowadays.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, yeah. Also, okay. I mean, maybe I'll bring my own microphone. Because it does also, it indicates to the tech people at the very least, hey, I'm serious about this job. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
yeah.
Listen up. I'd bring my own mic. Like, I just want a tiny, I can't wait to find out what kind of suitcase I have for it. I mean, it's going to be great.
Like, there's a comedian named Rodney Carrington. He's sort of a cowboy, and he carries his cowboy hat and a little cowboy hat like a carrying case. It's just a little, it's like a little like a little caddy case. It looks like a fishing case, you know, like you would carry your lure and stuff. So maybe it looks like that. It's a little carrying. A microphone carrying, like a Shure carrying case for your microphone.
Absolutely. I mean, I also think, well, so I used to, for a brief period of time in my late 20s, I was a circus ringmaster. And the acrobats that I perform with, they would carry their trapezes. The only thing that is like the right size for circus apparatuses are gun boxes. So, like, they look like they're going to have two giant rifles in them, these huge, like, secured gun boxes, because your trapeze is, like, you can't use someone else's trapeze. You have to bring your own, and it's really important that it stays safe because you're going to be dangling from that 30 feet in the air. And one time I was traveling with the circus company. We were in a 14-passenger van, and we were driving over the Hoover Dam. And this was, you know, it was like, maybe they still do this, but at the time they were checking all of the cars to make sure there weren't explosives. Because the Hoover Dam is one of those things that, like, if you were trying to really fuck up the United States, blow that thing up. And so state troopers open the back of a van and then the back of our van, and I was traveling. It was me and seven acrobats, and the back of the van was just stacked with these enormous gun boxes. And so the state trooper is just like, well, ladies, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I don't know what you're trying to get across. You know, but I got to search all of these boxes. And so then what happened was all of the circus performers got down their gun boxes and opened them up, and inside, trapezes, which I think is probably one of the weirdest things that can happen to you if you're a state trooper that works that job. Like, I don't think that ever they open the gun box and see many flying trapezes.
Wow.
They were like, what are these used for? And people that I was traveling with literally just started doing the splits.
Oh, wow.
So somewhere there's a state trooper that has that story.
That's great. That's great. Now, did you have a top hat and like one of those? Did you have a whip? No, that's like a lion tamer.
So I didn't have a whip because we didn't have any animals, but I did have a top hat, and I did have like the coat with the tails.
The red coat with the tails.
I had a bunch of
that's
different
cool.
coats.
Did you also have like a white ruff thing?
I would wear like a tuxedo shirt, or like sometimes I was doing a more steampunk vibe, and I'd have like goggle, you know, like this whole thing. I would wear shorts with fishnets, and then I wore knee-high boots and everything.
That's cool.
Then also the other performers would do my makeup, because I don't really know how to do even basic makeup, but they would do like a whole sort of a glitter, very intense eyes makeup.
That's great. How exciting. That's really exciting. That's like, so then that is like a stand-up comedian, like the MC. So you were like the ringmaster MC of a circus. So that is a stand-up comedian's job.
It was absolutely stand-up comics. Well, because it was also a one-ring circus. So in a three-ring circus, like the reason there are different rings is because they're setting up for the next act. And so they move your attention over to this other area. But it was a one-ring circus. So they would be setting up behind me whatever was going to happen next, like if it was a tightrope or whatever it was. And I would have to stand in front of it and try to be captivating while like people are moving large objects behind me, which was perfect stand-up training.
Yeah, of course. Of course. That's great.
It was fantastic.
That is so fun.
It was so fun.
That's really fun. So then you would just travel, and then it was sort of like this. It was like a variety show, pretty much circus variety show performance. So like, did they have clowns and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, the folks that were in it were folks who were like, if you work for Cirque du Soleil, but you're in between contracts, or maybe you are with a circus that like is contracted to China for a while, but then you have to train so that you can make sure that you can do it while you're contracted on the road. And so it was a lot of folks like that. There were clowns that had been with Ringling Brothers, or clowns that had trained with Cirque du Soleil. And it was just people like between gigs, keeping their chops. And so that it was a circus of those people.
So like there was like so it was like trapeze and like contortionists, that kind of stuff, or
it was acrobatics. So like people like flipping in the air or climbing on each other's bodies. There was trapeze stuff. There was tightrope walkers. There were people who were in like these big wheels.
Oh that, yes,
like,
yes.
They're flying around. People that did. I had a roommate at the time, and her job was she was a hair hanger, which is tie your hair in a really elaborate top knot, and then you put a metal ring through there, and the ring is attached to a cable that is on a motor. And so she would like fly up to the ceiling, and she would be hanging from just her hair, and then she would do like a bunch of different spins and stuff, things like that. Chainsaw juggling, things like that.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. My job was I spoke words out of my mouth.
One time I did a pilot with some people. It's really crazy. It was like it was America's Got Talent, but it was all people like that. Like it was chainsaw juggling, and it would probably be like a hair hanging, and but also there was a eat glass, and Nails in the nose.
Nails in the nose, sword swallowing.
Sword swallowing.
Yes.
And that kind of, and it, I really got real, I couldn't handle it. I felt really, I was like, you know what? Five stars. Like, I just gave everybody the top 10. 10. Because I just wanted it to be done, because I didn't want to see them eat any more tax. Like, I felt so bad. Because it's like, I thought that they all did a great job. I really was like, you're all great. But it, I felt bad. Like, I didn't want them to be hurt, because I get nervous. And then, like, because one time, when I was really young, I was doing this thing with these, it was a high school show, and it was actually younger kids, too. There was a trampoline act, these, like, three trampoline families, like, family, and one of them would, like, play this electric guitar, and then he would do flips, and then he was playing it, and then he impaled himself on the neck of the guitar, and it broke.
No!
So all the shards of the wood got in his stomach.
No!
And it was, like, blood everywhere, and then the curtain closed, and they pushed me out. They're like, just go do some jokes. Just do some jokes. And then the curtain closed, and all the kids were crying, and I'm, like, trying to do jokes, and then the curtain opened again, and he's, like, holding his stomach and, like, everything's fine. Everything's fine.
My God.
And the curtain closed again, and they're like, just cancel this. The show's canceled. It's over. It's over. And he was not fine, and the ambulance came. So that's, like, burned into my mind of, like, blood being everywhere. Like, so, you know, those variety acts, it's scary.
Yes, that, first of all, that is so gnarly. And and that is what my experience, I didn't see anything like that, but my experience was that circus is one of those things, especially like a Cirque du Soleil sort of a thing. You're so far away from it usually, and it's so deliberately lit, and everybody's got sparkly costumes on. When you get much closer to it, you realize, like, everybody is bleeding. Like, everybody has, like, calluses. Like, this, like, really hurts, the stuff that they're doing. Like, it looks so beautiful. And part of the skill is that they're, like, you know, smiling. It's like when you see a ballet dancer's feet for the first time, and you're like, oh, you don't have any toenails. You know, like, it's like that thing where you realize, like, oh, this, like, this is fucked up. Is that is that the most extreme situation you've ever performed through? Impaled by guitar trampoline guy?
I think impaled by the neck of a broken guitar. I think that's the worst thing I've seen in a show. That's pretty bad.
It's pretty bad. That's why I was asking, because I was going to try to, I couldn't even imagine what would top that.
I don't think I've never seen anything worse than that.
I was just starting to do improv, and I was having those jobs I talked about in Boston, but I did other weird side gigs, like, that were sort of in the performing family. I was a street performer that had, like, my street performer's license and did puppetry. You know, I would be the person that's, like, handing you a granola bar, but they're also dressed as a granola bar. Like, I've been contracted by the company to do that.
Yeah.
But one thing I did was I worked at dinner theater, a murder mystery dinner theater. And one time a guy had a stroke, and that, because of this experience, I know that that is actually the worst thing that can happen at a murder mystery dinner theater, is a real medical emergency. Because all of the other people that were at this performance, they were like, this guy is doing an amazing job. Because, you know, like, because some of the people that are actors are, like, sitting next to you, or they're the server or whatever. Like, it's all about that, like, immersive experience. And so then one guy was, like, choking and falling on the floor. And people were like, this is amazing. And
No,
we have to call 911. Like, this is an emergency.
Oh, no. I know.
That's one of those ones.
That's really bad. Because it's at a murder mystery thing. So you're just, everybody's just like, wow, you know,
who done it? And it's like his, probably his blood pressure, you know, like, it's like some, like, family medical history. I don't know who done it. Somebody.
That is true. No.
Yeah.
So bad. So sad.
It's,
well, I love you. I wish I could see you, but you know what? I'm glad that we got to catch up at least.
Yeah.
And I mean, at least we're doing good inside, and you know, we'll see each other on the outside sometime.
Yeah, and I will also say the opportunity to be real and connect with another comic that feels a lot of the same things, that doesn't always happen in days when we are Zooming.
It's really nice.
Doing our regular lives. So thanks for
your
time.
I'm so glad.
So good to see you.
So good to see you. So where can people find you on the socials?
I'm Cameron Esposito. I'm Cameron Esposito everywhere, except on TikTok, where I'm Cameron Y. Esposito. I'm on my book that came out the first week of quarantine and is called Save Yourself, which is an apt title.
So perfect.
Unrelated book. You can get that anywhere books are sold.
Wonderful.
Thanks, Margaret. It's taking over my dreams, waking me out of my sleep. I think I'm coming apart.
The Margaret Show is an Irios production with editing by Tracy Levy and original music by Garrison Starr. Never miss an episode of The Margaret Show. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Irios.
Powered by Acast.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.